Okay, they have to factor in their
Good morning, members. It's 8:30. We're calling the committee to of children and family to order. We'll start with doing the roll. Ms. Khan?
Chair Pinto's excused. Vice Chair Keeler?
Present.
Lee Daniels?
Present.
Representative Bliss? Representative Coulter?
Present.
Representative Davis?
Present.
Representative Hansen?
Present.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
Present.
Representative Hicks?
Present.
Representative Hudson?
Present.
Representative Kachizawatun?
Present.
Representative Lee?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Pettis-Vega? Representative Zalesnikar?
Present.
We have quorum.
Thank you. We will be doing the minutes at the end because when Chair Pinto comes back, there's a couple things that he wants to chat about in that. So we'll do that at the end. So we will move directly on to our first bill. We'll be hearing House File 1277. If you want to head up and get ready, Representative Coulter. When you're ready, you can introduce yourself to the committee and start with your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nathan Coulter, and I guess I should start off by saying that I nicked myself shaving this morning. I'm not just, like, bleeding from my head. excuse me. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am really, really excited to be here today presenting House File 1277. This bill makes investments in as well as policy changes to our early learning scholarships program, both of which are needed and both of which will pay huge dividends for kids and families here in Minnesota. House File 1277, I think, links together several important themes that have already been a significant part of the work that we've done in this committee. We've learned about how brains develop prenatally, and I think it's worth remembering that 80% of brain development happens by age 3 and 90% by age 5. We've also heard about adverse childhood experiences and how quality early care and education can mitigate some of those most harmful effects. We've discussed the economic impacts that the lack of this kind of care can have and how we know from the research that the best way to address opportunity gaps is by preventing them from opening in the first place. And of course, just this past Tuesday, we heard about the recommendations from the Great Start Task Force, which did extensive outreach and engagement and heard directly from parents, providers, and policymakers, and many others on the reality of the need we face and the steps, and the steps needed to address these issues. In short, we know that early care and education is critically important for kids, it's critically important for families, it's critically important for all of us. Early learning scholarships are an integral piece of early care and education in Minnesota, but we also know that we can do more. An estimated 31,000 Minnesota kids would take advantage of early learning scholarships if the program were fully funded. Imagine saying to every single person who lives in Little Canada, Fairmont, and Hermantown that we could give you these kinds of benefits. So to the specifics of the bill, House File 1277 increases funding for early learning scholarships by $485 million per year. In doing so, we can increase income eligibility to 200% of federal poverty level, expand eligibility to all children under the age of 5, and cover the full cost of care. And I want to take a moment on this point. The caps for these early learning scholarships are set by MDE, and the current maximum is $8,500 a year for non-priority children and $12,000 per year for priority children. And MDE has publicly committed to increasing the caps if they're given these resources. This bill also permanently prioritizes children who meet specified criteria related to adverse childhood experiences and adds additional priorities, including children in families where a caregiver is participating in chemical dependency or mental health treatment or is incarcerated, as well as families who've experienced domestic violence. And I would also note that those changes are specifically recommended by the Great Start Task Force. In short, members, this approach is tested and effective. It's universal, but it prioritizes children most in need. And as we've discussed previously, we know that the payback will be impressive. I believe the term magic money tree was thrown around recently. I'm proud that this is my first bill heard in committee as a member of the House, and I hope we can find a way to fund this. At this point, I will turn things over to my testifiers, but I did want to also mention that there are obviously a large number of letters in support from various organizations who know how critical these scholarships are. I did just want to specifically point out the letters from the County Attorneys Association, Children's Defense Fund, and the Early Care and Education Crisis Working Group.
To testifiers?
Yeah.
If you're on the list, if you want to start making your way down, just so that we can move through quickly, each testifier will have 2 minutes. First up, we have Stephanie Pill. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please start by letting us know your name, pronouns if you prefer, and organization that you're with.
My name is Stephanie Peel. I'm just a parent. I have 4 children. All 4 have or have been on the scholarship program. It has helped support me and my family in an incredible way. It has relieved me from financial stress from having somewhere to bring my children so that I can work and provide for them and help the economy, as well as relief of knowing they're learning things they will need and use for the rest of their life. When I found out I was approved for the scholarships, I was so overwhelmingly happy, excited, and relieved. Relieved of my financial burden, because without the scholarship, I cannot afford to send my kids to the amazing program that they are attending now. My kids are so incredibly happy to go to the program that they are on. So I am so thankful to and blessed to the scholarship and the people out here that are supporting it. You could not imagine how important this is to my family and so many others out there.
Thank you. Next up, we have Diane Halsey.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Diane Halsey, and I am President and CEO of the Family Partnership. And I'm here to testify today in strong support of House File 1277. The Family Partnership is a 144-year-old Minneapolis-based multicultural nonprofit focused on helping families impacted by systemic racism and adversity. We provide many programs, including 2 therapeutic early childhood programs. Of the families we serve, 95% live below 200% of the federal poverty line, and 90% of those families are families of color. We support this bill as we know it will help transform the lives of many families and provide children with opportunities. Scholarships have become a major part of creating a robust child care system in our state, and will continue to be a vital part of the lives of many low-income families. The Early Learning Scholarship Program has grown since it began in 2008 and has helped thousands of children since its inception. Unfortunately, tens of thousands of eligible Minnesota children still do not benefit from it due to lack of funding. And this bill will ensure that all children currently on the wait list would have access. And many more families who do not sign up for the wait list would also be able to receive an early learning scholarship and attend quality early care and education programming. I've been working in the field of early childhood going on 30 years, primarily in low-income, low-resource communities. I have seen this scholarship program change people's lives. One of these people is a young girl that came to our program. Her name is Camille. Camille and her mom, Nicole, have worked with us since Camille was only 3 months old. The family faced many unique challenges, including the challenges Nicole has had cognitively. And when they arrived at TFP, Camille was testing below her peers developmentally. We were able to provide the family with the structure they needed and the therapy Camille needed to ensure she was prepared for kindergarten. And today, Camille is blooming in elementary school and achieving dreams that her mother and grandmother Karen always knew she was capable of. With the help of scholarships, our services bring even more opportunities to connect families with the supports they need. We know that Governor Waltz and you as the legislature are committed to reducing child poverty. There's no greater tool to help reduce child poverty long-term and close the persistent Minnesota opportunity gaps in early learning scholarships. We support increased funding towards early learning scholarships so that families like Camille's can enjoy and access high-quality care. In my career, I've had the pleasure of not only overseeing therapeutic early childhood programming, but also administering early learning scholarships in Hennepin and Ramsey County. And in both places, there is nothing worse than having to turn a child down or away because the funds have run out, or ask a child to leave the program because and leave the teachers and playmates they love so dearly because their scholarship has run out for the year. Because of this, we urge you to support House File 1277 so that all Minnesota children will be ready for kindergarten and beyond. And if you allow, I had a parent of one of our programs that wanted to attend today to testify, but they did not have any transportation, so they wrote their testimony, which I would like to read today. There was already some mention of the cap and the scholarships, and there is some mention around this cap. Marissa's children attend our Four Directions preschool.
We can make a copy of that and send it around with the other written testimony. We just want to make sure we have enough time for the other testifiers.
Oh, okay.
If that's okay, can we make copies? We'll get it out to the members so they can read that.
Okay.
Thank you. Up next, we have Nakia Howard.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nakia Howard, and I'm the owner of Kia's Love Bugs Child Care, a four-star rated licensed family program located in Oakdale, Minnesota. I'm honored to have this opportunity to speak with you today about the importance of making sure all of our young children have a chance to learn and grow. The children in my program receive quality hands-on care while preparing for pre-K readiness in an enriched environment of love and structure. The benefit of having scholarships in place allows parents to attend school, work, or enjoy a day off without stress of choosing between their child's education or providing a roof over their heads. This has been a major concern for many families, especially navigating the post-pandemic economy. It would mean so much to me if every child in our community can receive funding for a better future. Some of these kids are victims of financial hardship, whether it be low income, homelessness, unemployment, or poverty in general. It is important that these children are eligible to receive a scholarship to fully cover their tuition in my program. We as family child care providers put in so much work to ensure these children have a head start on learning before they enter school. And oftentimes they aren't rewarded enough in compensation for the work that we do in the same way that other child care centers are. We want to be part of the solution, not the problem. Thank you for your time, and I highly urge you to support this legislation so all children in low-income households can experience good quality child care. Thank you, Nakia Howard.
Thank you, Ms. Howard. Up next, we have Meredith Johnson.
Thank you, Chair.
Please introduce yourself and organization for the committee.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Meredith Johnson, the Educational Services Manager at People Serving People, and an excited mother-to-be. At People Serving People, we work with families experiencing homelessness throughout Hennepin County. Our shelter provides supportive services for families, and we operate 2 4-star parent-aware rated early childhood development centers, one on-site at the shelter and another in the community, our Center of Excellence. We serve a diverse group of families through our 2 programs, including families that are highly mobile or experiencing homelessness. In our classrooms, we utilize a trauma-informed approach that focuses on social and emotional development and executive functioning skills to prepare kids and families for kindergarten and beyond. Early childhood education is central to our work in preventing the experience of intergenerational family homelessness. It's an investment in the whole family, and in particular, the youngest member of the family. Many of our families use early learning scholarships and the Child Care Assistance Program to access early childhood programs. Families are able to thrive in our community when they have the peace of mind that comes with having their child or children in a high-quality child care center. One parent from our Center of Excellence who wanted me to share, her name is Sierra, describes the center as their child's second family. Without this funding, families experiencing homelessness, children in foster care, and families with low incomes would not be able to access quality care and early education. Access to early learning scholarships is crucial in the financial support of our early childhood programs, which allows us to make a powerful impact in this condensed amount of time. In 100% of our children within the average time they spend at our shelter, about 60 days, they show growth in three or more of our assessed developmental categories. At People Serving People, we support bills like this that work upstream to prevent families from entering shelters or returning to our shelter multiple times in their lives. Early learning scholarships are directly tied to a family's ability to stay in stable housing. Last year, we had a family find housing only to return to the shelter after their family grew and their scholarship funds ran out. Without reliable and consistent year-round child care, parents cannot work or pay rent. Sierra also emphasized that scholarships allow for a better future for her children moving forward. I'm excited for my child to grow up in Minnesota. I want him to grow up in a state that values making sure all families, regardless of income, have access to the same high-quality early childhood education that he does. We hope you will support fully funding early learning scholarships to ensure that all of Minnesota's youngest learners have the same opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Also, I will say thank you for bringing the point forward that this is part of preventing homelessness. As we talked about it in other spaces, I think it's good to call that out, that when we make investments like this, that actually keeps people in homes as well. That was it for our list of testifiers. Do we have any public testifiers? Seeing none. Last time I moved too fast, so I just want to make sure I give everybody enough time. We will move to discussion of the bill. Any questions? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any questions, but I do want to thank Representative Coulter for bringing this bill forward. Mm-hmm. And perhaps unintentionally, perhaps intentionally, this is a great furtherance of the conversation we were having on Tuesday. Which descended into the rabbit hole of economic theory, but this actually is a on-point response to what I was hoping we would do as a committee in this work, which is recognizing the value of parents acting as that quality control mechanism. This bill empowers parents to take dollars that are attached to their kid and seek the highest possible quality care they can find. And I appreciate that, and I thank you for bringing the bill forward. I also note that the Minnesota Child Care Association's written testimony, they highlight that we're nationally known for this innovation of early childhood scholarships. So I'm glad that we're leaning into that. And again, I thank you for bringing the bill forward, and I look forward to supporting it.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for bringing this bill forward. I am so excited to see that we're prioritizing early learning scholarships, and I'm also really excited to see that we've moved that federal poverty guideline. Inflation has taken a hit, and so I think it's important to make sure that we recognize that we're incorporating a lot of more families by this bill. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for bringing this forward. I'm excited to move this today.
Representative Nelson.
I will echo, thank you, Chair, and I will echo that. You know, thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I think the especially in rural Minnesota, we see there's a limited options of choices oftentimes, and you know, the flexibility of being able to you know, help families get into something that fits their family best, I think is crucially important, and I thank you for bringing this bill forward and the funding that it's coming with.
Representative Zalesnikar.
thank you. And thank you to, I just want to echo what everybody's saying today. This is such a big thing for all of Minnesota. And I think it's a huge initiative to help the children heal after COVID too, and to get ready for school. So I just want to lend my support too and say thank you, because I think that's great work from the committee and appreciate you bringing the bill forward. Thank you.
Representative Katiza Watoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Coulter, for carrying this bill. I've carried the bill in the past. I'm a big supporter of scholarships and a big supporter of making sure that all families in Minnesota have what they need. Scholarships are a really important piece of this early learning puzzle that we have here in Minnesota. And I think that this is great to see the additional investment. It's great to see the expansion of access. And I'm glad to see such bipartisan support.
Nothing else, we'll go to Lee Daniels.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. Thank you, Representative Coulter, for bringing the bill forward. This is right on mark for helping children and giving parents the power to choose where they want to bring their kids. But I do, before I forget, I want to give a credit where credit is due. This came from Jennifer Loon, former chair of the, I believe, Education Finance. And it's been growing ever since. And what a great deal it is. And it went from 185th percent poverty level to 200% poverty level. It sounds like a big jump. I did a little bit of work on my computer last night, and it's just a bump. It's like, yeah, if you're making $45,000, now you can make $47,000. So I was happy to see it's not unreasonable. But I like the program. I like the bipartisanship we've got going through this. Feel like singing Kumbaya, because we have very few of those moments anymore. So thank you again, Mr. Coulter, for bringing this forward, Representative Coulter, and I look forward to what happens down the road.
Lee Daniels, are you going to lead us in that?
Not me.
He's leading.
If I had a trumpet in my hand, I would lead. But okay. My voice, not so good.
Got it. I would agree with that. I think that in many times we come to these tables hoping to come together for what is really good for Minnesota, border to border, especially for our next generation. So I appreciate all the individuals who have worked on this from the very beginning to continue to carry it, to build it to what it is. So thank you, Representative Coulter, for that. Final remarks on the bill?
Certainly. Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you all for your kind words of support. I know they were directed sort of overtly toward me, but I know they were really directed toward the parents and families and advocates who have made this bill, made this program what it is here in Minnesota. So I know everybody's appreciative of that. So thank you, members. I guess in closing, I would just say, you know, early learning scholarships obviously represent an opportunity to support something that shows not only that we care about our youngest Minnesotans and want them to get off to a great start, but that we know a good investment when we see one. They focus on children who are most in need, take advantage of high-quality programs in our communities, ensure that parents have the flexibility to do their work and live their lives, and at least start to pay providers adequately. And they do all that with a big return on investment. We, as has been noted, this program's been around for a number of years, and even before that, there are literal decades of research showing how important this is. We know the success stories. And, you know, it's funny, when I was on the city council, it became sort of a running joke, because I would say this every year when we would get into budget season. But budget decisions are policy decisions. And if we agree that these outcomes are ones that we support, there is every reason to fund this program. But budget decisions are values decisions, too. And I think making this kind of investment in our early learning scholarships would be an incredibly powerful demonstration of the value that we place on Minnesota's kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. With that, Representative Coulter moves that House File 1277 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Okay,
I think before we move to the next bill, we're going to call up Craig Gratke for a brief overview of Head Start before we move the bill.
Madam, did we need to move that as a committee, or I don't remember the procedure, if we had to approve the laying over.
To lay it over?
Yeah, I don't remember if we had to or not. Okay. Okay, laying over is a chair call. Okay.
Thanks. Welcome to the committee. If you want to start by introducing yourself, pronouns if you'd like, and organization, and we'll give you 5 to 7 minutes for an overview.
That works.
Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I would also like to acknowledge we have a large Head Start, early Head Start presence here today, parents and staff, and it just speaks to Head Start's leadership, to have parents engaged in a process and to be here participating and watching how the legislature works. And so with that, I will give a very brief overview of Head Start in Minnesota. Head Start serves children and families living in poverty. And so if you think about a family of four, gross income, $26,000 a year or less. Also homeless families and families that are receiving cash assistance or SNAP. We're talking about the poorest families in Minnesota, the absolute poorest families in Minnesota. Some of the families earn half of the federal income guidelines. So you're looking at $13,000 a year for a family of four. These are the families that Head Start is reaching out to and working with across the state. We also have some of the largest programs in the country, one of the largest programs in the country, but we also have the second smallest program in the country. Very diverse types of programs in Minnesota. We have 33 programs spread across the state. They serve every corner of the state, whether that's in partnerships with schools, in combination with schools, renting space in schools, doing home visiting services, partnerships with child care providers, where programming is blended in child care and Head Start services are wrapped around. Of those programs, there are 8 tribal programs that serve the tribal children in Minnesota. We also have a migrant seasonal program that serves migrant seasonal families from North Dakota all the way to the Iowa border. And so in the fact sheet, you will see a handful of facts and figures and those kinds of things. On the back is a map. And it kind of lays out where the programs are, where the migrant seasonal programs operate, and where the tribal programs are. One of the things that...
I'm just going to pause you for 1 second to make sure members know that what we're looking at is actually in our packets today. So if you want to be able to follow along. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. As I talk about this just a little bit more, I want to recognize that 55% of the children in Head Start and early Head Start in Minnesota are children of color. And of the 45% that identify as white, 10% identify as Latino. 65% of the children that we serve are children that are typically underserved, underrepresented. The children that we know are falling behind in Minnesota. I mean, our own record speaks to that. Investing in early Head Start and Head Start moves the needle, and we have proof. We've been doing research on our children for 12 years, collecting data, doing comparative analysis, looking at what teachers do to effectively scaffold children up. The bulk of our children, even during the COVID years, did attain, there's a state level of kindergarten readiness. They did attain or go past that level of readiness. Think about that. During COVID, when we were shutting down, closing, back and forth, children were still moving ahead. Programs made a difference in a lot of ways. I would just call your attention to a couple other things that I think are unique to Head Start. In a way, we don't all talk about school readiness or preschool readiness, but about family and community supports. 41% of the families in Early Head Start and Head Start received emergency services. 26% received some kind of housing assistance. 14% received some kind of mental health services. 45% received intensive parenting education. 51% received nutrition education. And 31% had an active handoff to kindergarten, where the Head Start programs were working in concert to hand the children off to kindergarten teachers, kindergarten programs. Head Start as an economic driver, about $148 million comes into Head Start into Minnesota annually from the federal government. It's matched by $25 million locally, and we're asking to increase that, of course, in a lot of different ways today with the bills. That serves about 15,000 kids through those programs that I had talked about. Roughly one-third the staff are former parents or children themselves. It's an economic driver. We hire the folks that come into our program, may not have all the skills they need, but the Head Start program pays for tuition, helps support families. Families move up and they become teachers, or they move on, and we have some parents that are directors now, managers in programs, doing really exciting things. I really want to call attention to the parent quotes in the fact sheet too. That speaks volumes to how Head Start and Early Head Start have impacted families. We also have somebody testifying, a parent testifying later, that will really speak to that as well. With that, I think I'm about at time. Yeah.
Thank you. Are there any questions regarding the overview? If not, we will move on to the bill. Seeing none, we'll move on to the bill. Representative Lee, if you want to go up and get ready. Okay, Representative Lee moves the House File 874 in front of the committee for possible inclusion. We'll start with Representative Lee. You have an author's amendment, A2. Do you want to go over the amendment for us?
Sure, yes. So before I move to amend the House File, I have the A2 amendment, which is in members' packets. This amendment does a couple things, which is included in your summary. First, the most important thing is it allows the Head Start programs to streamline the paperwork needed to do partnerships with school districts across the state. And then there's a provision for appropriations for Head Start infrastructure. As you know, we are working with a lot of young students, and this means that we have to have physical capacity, especially if we're going to focus on our 0 to 3 age constituents. Another part of the amendment is a workforce development demonstration project, which we can talk a little bit more about later in the discussion of the bill.
Sounds good. I'm going to actually have you back up and introduce yourself.
Oh, sure. That's okay. Great. Thank you, Chair Keeler. Good morning, everyone. I am Representative Liz Lee from St. Paul's East Side in District 67A. So as we've just discussed, we're considering House File 874 today. And before we proceed to bill discussion, I'm moving to adopt the A2 amendment.
Okay.
to get into it into the shape that we'd like to consider it in.
Representative Lee would like to move the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. All that passes. We'll move forward with House File 874 as amended to your bill, Representative Lee.
Great. Thank you. And thank you to all of my colleagues on the Children and Families Committee. So today I have the honor of presenting House File 874, which, as you've heard, will robustly fund Head Start and Early Head Start programs in Minnesota. But before I continue, I also want to take a moment to thank everyone who has been working incredibly hard, some for many, many years, to make this happen, including Representative Katuza Watoon, Chair Pinto, our research staff, and
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Who's ever taking notes? Could you make sure that the proper amendment was named?
The A2. Oh, sorry. The A2 amendment.
Yeah, A2-1?
A2-1.
Yes, thank you. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. So, in case there needs to be clarity.
Yep. Hang on a second, please. Thanks. Okay, so Representative Lee moves the A2 amendment before us. All those in favor say
aye.
Aye. Now, Representative Lee, we have House File 874 as amended with the right amendment, A2-1. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Chair Keeler. So I just want to go back to make sure that House File 874 as amended with the A2-1 amendment is a culmination and you know, a really a product of all the love and resources from advocates, our research staff, nonpartisan staff who've been putting together this proposal for many years, including Mr. Gackey, who is the executive director of the Head Start Association in Minnesota, and advocates like the folks from Elders for Infants and many other people who are concerned about you know, the future of our state, even if they don't have children. But so as you've just heard Mr. Gackey describe, Head Start is an extremely valuable program that has proven time and again to lift children and families out of poverty. And just earlier during the discussion of my colleague Rep. Coulter's bill and other advocates here, we've laid out how important it is to invest in our early learners, especially if we care about the future of our state. And so that is why I'm proud to share that House File 874 will increase funding to Head Start by $10 million each year to meet the increased need that we've seen. I know I have a lot of witnesses who will help highlight the key parts of the bill, so I'm going to let them testify first, and then I will fill in the blanks at the end to close in case there are questions.
Representative Lee, if you're on the testifier list, if you want to start to make your way down just so that we can move through testifiers quickly, that would be ideal. We will start with Jim Nicoli. Good morning. Please introduce yourself and your organization for the committee and start with your testimony.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jim Nicolai, and I'm here representing a group called Elders for Infants. It's an informal group of retired early childhood professionals from multiple fields representing early care and education, parent education, mental health, and health care. Elders for Infants are dedicated to making visible the needs of infants and toddlers from prenatal to age 3, along with their mothers, fathers, extended family, and caregivers. We have a particular concern for families who face disproportionate odds due to economic, geographic, and racial inequalities. The elders believe that Minnesota's prosperity depends on a sustainable system of care and support for all families with very young children. We enthusiastically support the Head Start bill with particular appreciation for the elements which can expand and strengthen Early Head Start. Early Head Start is a program serving low-income pregnant women, infants, toddlers, and their families by providing child development and family support services in home-based centers, home-based programs, center-based programs, and family child care settings. By providing children with individualized services and high-quality early care and education, along with building parent skills and community connections, Early Head Start can directly and indirectly support children's well-being and development. The elders are impressed that Early Head Start has been endorsed by the Prenatal to Three Policy Impact Center at Vanderbilt University. It's one of the strategies which states can employ to improve outcomes for young children and their families. Elders find several features of Early Head Start remarkable in demonstrating quality and effectiveness in early childhood programming, including structured support for family involvement and meeting family needs, flexibility in delivery services, including the forging of community relationships, high quality standards, extensive data collection at local, state, and federal levels, and robust outcomes for both families and children. The required data collection embedded in Head Start and Early Head Start has produced numerous outcome studies, which have recently been reviewed by Prenatal to Three Policy Impact Center. The most salient of these findings are that Early Head Start has a wide range of positive impact in five major areas, including providing nurturing and responsive child care in safe settings, increasing the share of children participating in good quality center and family child care. Second, enhancing nurturing and responsive child-parent relationships, including improving home learning environments, family routines, parent-child interaction, and child development knowledge, creating more supportive home environments for language literacy, influencing later healthy family functioning, and reducing conflict, reducing child abuse factors. Third, promoting optimal child health and development, including raising vocabulary skills at age 2 and 3, raising developmental functioning assessment scores at age 2, supporting parent health and emotional well-being in addition, reducing parental stress and distress, increasing coping skills and a positive mental health for the families, producing parents' ability to work, increasing parental participation in education and job training, and enhance later education and employment outcomes. Because of this robust foundation, elders are also supportive of Early Head Start as a platform for demonstrating how an early childhood workforce, including former and current parents of Head Start children, can acquire the credentials and advance their careers and economic well-being while also developing and refining skills to better meet the emotional and mental health needs of children and families they serve. Local partnerships between Early Head Start programs and higher education, supported by the resources of the Minnesota Association for Children's Mental Health, can multiply the efforts of these sectors for the good of Minnesota's youngest children and their families. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we have Nicole Mensing.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Mensing, and I am the Head Start Director of the Head Start and Early Head Start program, which is run by Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington County. So we provide Head Start services in Ramsey County, primarily in St. Paul. We operate 14 licensed child care programs throughout St. Paul and suburban Ramsey County, which are all 4-star parentaware rated. Our program serves approximately 1,300 infants, toddlers, and preschoolers in center-based and home-based settings across Ramsey County. So Head Start is really known as a provider of very high quality early childhood education services. which we take very seriously in our program. Just a little bit about some of the children and families we serve. I always like to share that approximately 70% of the children enrolled in our program are dual language learners, meaning they are speak a language other than English in their home and then are also learning English at the same time. We have approximately, the children and families in our program speak approximately 30 different languages. So we serve a very diverse population in the city of St. Paul and Ramsey County, which we are very proud of. I think that part of the hallmark of Head Start is the wraparound services. So not only the very high quality early childhood education services that we provide, including using a research-based curriculum, research-based assessment tools, but also the wraparound services, including family support services, early intervention, health, mental health services, nutrition, transportation, to really support the whole child and the whole family in being ready for kindergarten and to be successful in life. So some of the partnerships and program options that we operate are we provide a therapeutic preschool program. We have a partnership with St. Paul Public Schools where we serve the children of teen parents in our early Head Start program. We have a very large home visiting program. We also partner with other school districts in our county to provide services in those school districts. And we also partner with some of the public housing communities in St. Paul in order to have Head Start locations and centers to meet the needs of families in different geographic parts of Ramsey County. So I am going to kind of yield the rest of my time to introduce a parent in our Head Start program. She's actually a parent and a colleague of mine. Her name is Teriro Chinyanganya, and I think she'll be able to speak very well to the support of family services and the high-quality early childhood education services provided by Head Start.
Hello, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to speak as well as the rest of the committee. My name is Teriro Chinyanganya. I am currently the CAPRW, or Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington County, a recruitment and retention manager, as well as a Head Start parent. I feel as though Head Start has deeply empowered me to improve my life as well as my son's life. Through Head Start, especially with the meetings with our family advocate, I was empowered to go and get this position as the recruitment and retention manager of Community Action, as well as assist my son in bettering his education. I'm currently going to school to complete my human resources management degree, and so I somewhat didn't think I was even qualified for the position. After speaking to my family advocate, we mapped out my goals and what I wanted to do to better improve my son's life as well. I somewhat didn't even think they were possible or they were possible to happen this quickly, but with all of the support that I received from my family advocate as well as all of the Head Start staff, I was able to accomplish all of my goals much faster than I thought possible. So with my son, he currently goes to the Midway Head Start location, and then I work at the St. Paul Community Action Head Start location within their Human Resources Department. And so in that goal mapping that we did at the very beginning, one of the main things that I wanted to tackle was my employment. I was previously employed within a position that just did not meet my financial needs, and so Head Start was really helpful in providing me with childcare. That childcare was provided allowed me to find the time to go and complete my schooling as well as also seek out different employment as well. When I spoke with my family advocate, they actually directed me to all of the open positions that they had within Community Action. And they told me, you know what, just go ahead and apply for that recruitment and retention manager position. And I honestly had avoided it for quite a few months because I just did not think that I would be able to do it. And then upon completing that whole process and entering the team, all of the staff was deeply empowering the entire way through. I didn't even know how I'd be able to have all of the things that I have on my plate, school, work, as well as taking care of my son. I didn't know how they would be possible, but I received so much support and so many resources from the Head Start program, as well as their family advocates. Some of that support that I received was even for things such as food shelves. Because I was dealing with financial issues, they assisted me with that. I previously actually even went to Community Action a long time ago, and I requested assistance and energy assistance. So they provide so much more assistance than what we think. It's not just childcare. It's even, I would call them a family, because they assisted me when my actual family was even out of the country and I didn't know how I'd be able to handle all of my responsibilities. So I really, really am grateful to Head Start for all of their empowerment. Also, I was on the policy council, so if I was not a staff member, you still have multiple ways that you're able to play a role in the education of your child, as well as the policies that are put into place. So within the policy council, we were able to vote on things such as, for example, the COVID masking policy, because everyone does have different opinions on certain things. So you're always able to play a role in your child's education, in their day-to-day environment whenever they're heading to school. And also with all of the family advocates, all of the staff members, you're always encouraged to participate. So the beautiful thing about Head Start that I found is that you are playing an active role in the education of your child, and you are also playing an active role in the improvement of your child's future as well as yours. I now see so many different options for myself and my child in the future, more than I ever thought would be possible. So I'm very grateful to Head Start, all of the staff members, directors, and program members for providing me the multiple opportunities that they have, and I look forward to serving the community that has served me so much longer. Yep. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. That was a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing with us. Next and last on the list, we have Shayna Morse. Good morning. Do you want to introduce yourself for the committee?
I will do that. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Shayna Morris, Assistant Director of Government Relations at MDE. Apologize for not being on deck. So I'm here to testify this morning in support of a couple of provisions in this House file, specifically the 10.72% set aside for tribal programs, and then also expanded youth provisions that are included as well. Those are also included in the governor's budget. And so as we've heard, we know that Head Start and early Head Start programs play an important role for many young children from low-income families when it comes to school readiness, early learning, and health and family well-being. And so we believe that we need to make some changes in order to better support those programs' ability to accomplish this. One of those things is going to be providing some more funding stability for those tribal programs. Currently, the distribution relies on the federal allocation, which, as federal funds have changed over time, that has negatively impacted some of our tribal programs who are looking for more consistency, which is required for them to expand their programming. And so that's something that we are looking at as well and supporting. Similarly, providing more flexibility in terms of how funds are used will also help to increase the capacity of these programs. We've heard barriers, and I think you've even heard today in some of the testimony, like transportation, for example, is a barrier for some of the programs to increase their enrollment. And so by allowing local programs to figure out what needs they have for infrastructure or staffing, transportation, we feel like that will, and we've heard that that will help them to increase capacity over time versus some of the restrictions that are in place now, and will also be reflective of what's needed in their local communities. So thank you for the opportunity to share those thoughts.
Thank you so much, Ms. Morris. Thanks so much, Ms. Morris, and hey, everybody. Glad to be back with you all. I think we're going to be moving to actually, let's see, first of all, if there's any members of the public who wish to testify on the bill, just have that happen. And then, Representative Lee, would you mind just walk us through, again, and my apologies if you did this, this would be helpful to me as the chair, to walk through the bill kind of as amended, what the elements are, because it's a fairly substantial amendment, or we could have House Research do that for you if that'd be easier too, either way.
Sure. I mean, I can start, and then perhaps Ms. Mock can fill us in if I'm missing anything. So I guess we can go first to House File 874 in general. Just like Ms. Morris just testified, House File 874 has the almost 11% set aside for tribal Head Start programs. And so that's something different to note. And the key part in House File 874 is the $10 million increase per year in this biennium. And then we moved to amend House File 874 with the A2-1 amendment. The first portion of that is technical changes to allow for streamlining of Head Start programs that partner with school districts, just like we heard about in testimony. Often there's confusion in reporting requirements. And so this section allows the Head Start to streamline this process. And we can go into more detail about that during the member discussion if folks have questions.
And that's like the first 4.5 pages.
Yes, so that is. That's all. And so okay. I'll take us to page 5 in subdivision 3. There is an allocation of $13 million per year in this biennium for Head Start infrastructure. So I mentioned earlier, when we are working with young children, we actually have to have capacity, right, because they take naps and they have to, have cribs sometimes, right, if you're working with the 0-3 population. And so this allocation would allow Head Start to expand greatly to all of the 87 counties across Minnesota. And then the last section, subsection 4, is a demonstration program that we can also go into detail more. It would allow Head Start to further expand its mental health program or mental health services for infants and parents, as we've seen and noted amongst policymakers and also parents and teachers. There is a great need to address mental health needs of our children. Even those under 5, our children are always watching and hearing and learning. And so, we've seen from the data recently that we also have to very much address mental health in young children as well as adults. And so that's what the amendment does. That's House File 874 as amended.
That is great. Thank you so much. I think that gives me what I need, so thank you. So, member discussion or questions on the bill? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question may be best answered by Ms. Morris, if she's available to.
Yeah, please, Ms. Morris, if you can please come back up.
I'm just interested in understanding the issue regarding the distribution of funds that required the 10.72% set aside, and interested in understanding how that very specific percentage was arrived at and how it provides stability to the.
I've always found that percentage a little unclear myself, so appreciate the question. So, Ms. Morris, please, you can answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hudson, I was a little bit in transit. I caught most of it, so I'm going to answer and then just tell me if it doesn't address all of it. So I think the question is sort of how the 10.72% was arrived at, or kind of what the issue is there. My understanding is that the state allocation follows the federal allocation. In recent years, the feds have increased and made some changes to how that works, which then trickles down to our allocation at the state level, negatively impacting sort of the predictability of tribal programs, which then impacts their ability to sustain and expand. And I believe that percentage was arrived at between collaborative conversations. I know our team at MDE was part of it. I know that the Head Start Association, I believe, was part of it, and that our tribal partners were part of it as well. I don't know exactly the calculations that they used to arrive at that, but I do know it was a collaborative process resulting from that issue.
And Representative Hudson, we could call it the Head Start folks, but I'll go back to you to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't need to know the math per se, but I'm just interested in why because I assume that if there's a stability problem with one group that's receiving the funds, that there's probably stability problems with other groups as well. Am I wrong about that, or is there something unique about the tribal Head Start portion that is causing instability?
This may be more of a Head Start Association question, if that's okay with you. Mr. Gretzky, come up. Yeah, Mr. Gretzky, if you can answer the question.
Yep. Okay, so about, I want to say, it was probably about 7 or 8 years ago, we started having this discussion. The travel programs are the smallest programs in the state, typically the smallest programs in the state. And at that time, we had increases in federal money coming in, and it was competitive federal money. So a number of programs received those funds, and that shifts the funding formula. That shifts the amount that flows from the state to grantees. So the more federal money you have, typically the more state money you get. And so the travel programs were losing revenue from the state, and they weren't they were writing grants, but they weren't as competitive as other folks. So they weren't bringing in any of that federal revenue. And the discussion at that point, we looked at, I think, the last 25 years of kind of the percentage that they were getting. At least, I'm going to say probably 10 or 15 years, the percentage that they had gotten year over year. The 10.72% was the highest end out of that time frame. That's what we landed on. And that just stabilizes them, because if you think about downshifting, and sometimes the downshifts in funding are like $50,000 to $80,000, that eliminates a home visitor. It eliminates like a half of a center-based program, those numbers of kids. And so the travel programs are just having a really tough time maintaining centers and staffing and all of those things. So the thought was, well, we'll set that like that, and that will allow them to plan so they know what they're doing from year to year. Does that make sense? I mean,
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It does make sense, and I very much appreciate that context and understanding. So would it be accurate to say that that because of the size, the relative size of the programs, that the fluctuations in federal allocations hit them harder than other communities?
Yep.
Mr. Gratke, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, good. And actually, Riffle Hudson?
No, I just, okay. Thank you, I appreciate it.
And actually, Vice Chair Keeler has a question that kind of builds on this and connects with it. Vice Chair Keeler?
Thank you for bringing that up. The next question that I have to follow up that is, in the language it says 10.72% of the total Head Start appropriation. My question is that per, okay, so when we're looking at line 5 of the amendment, there's different sections of that. So is it 10.72% of page 5 of that section? And then the next section, because are those needs the things that need to be happening on tribal nations, or is it just 10.72 of the entire appropriation for the tribes to decide what is best for their programs?
Mr. Gratke, do you understand the question?
I do.
Okay, please, Mr. Gratke.
So the 10.72 speaks to the total appropriation, but what I will say is in the facilities ask, that those facility pieces, there are tribal asks in that. And so the bulk of the facility things are shovel-ready kinds of projects. We come every year and ask for funding for facilities. Typically, those are health and safety things. Our programs are shifting down to early Head Start, and so changing Head Start classrooms into early Head Start. So that's in there. The mental health portion of this, that second or that third piece, we are talking about at least one tribal program participating in that. It's a demonstration project, like 4 grantees across the state, one of them being a tribal program.
Although I know, Mr. Gratke, that's not specified in the bill language, so maybe just for Representative Lee, and at least I don't see that.
Okay, that might not be in there, but that was...
Yeah, so I think if this moved forward, I think, right, Representative Lee.
Yeah, so I just want to clarify. I mean, so we... I want to clarify in answering Vice Chair Keeler's question, that 10.72% is for operational costs. And then there is, and we can share this, there's a list of infrastructure needs that we have received from the Head Start Association that actually comes from across the entire state. So some of, like Mr. Gratke mentioned, some of those programs will benefit tribal Head Start, or some of that money will benefit tribal Head Start programs. And then similarly with the demonstration project, that set aside doesn't quite apply, but at least we've identified at least one program that would probably benefit the tribal Head Start programs. it is a competitive grant, and so, you know, they have to apply for that, but the set aside is for operational funds.
Well, and it occurs to me, Representative Lee and Mr. Gradke, we could, and it may well make sense to say that of the four, you know, they have it be competitive grant, but one of the four is tribal, and there's competitive grant for that, and then the other three are non-tribal. And to be specific in that way, I think could make a lot of sense if that's the intent anyway. So I don't know if that's something you might be open to, Representative Lee, and this is being laid over anyway, so we'll be able to consider as it goes forward. But it does sound like then really the 10.72% applies to operations, and then there's the infrastructure piece, which I gather might not. And I don't know if Ms. Mock has an opinion on whether that 10.72% as written would necessarily apply to the infrastructure funding. We could figure out. Ms. Mock, you have any thoughts on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the 10.72% would only apply to the Head Start appropriation, not the infrastructure appropriation.
So there, too, we might want to keep an eye on that to make sure that infrastructure funding is going. I could imagine having a precise percentage wouldn't work very well for infrastructure.
No.
You know, wouldn't, not as well as operations, but we would want to make sure that we're providing sufficient support to tribal Head Start through infrastructure as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, good. Other questions, comments from anyone at all on the committee? I'm not seeing anything. Yeah. Representative Lee, we'll let you then close things out.
Sure. I just want to close out this conversation by just saying we used the term competitive earlier for the tribal Head Start programs, and not being competitive for federal grants doesn't mean that the program is bad. It just means that they are smaller programs. Like Mr. Kratke mentioned, we have really large programs in Ramsey County and Hennepin County, but some of our smallest programs in Minnesota are in greater Minnesota and part of the tribal Head Start programs. And so this allocation is really important because, again, we have to give our smaller programs consistency and funding and making sure they can hire instructors, et cetera. And so just because a program is not competitive for federal grants doesn't mean that it's not high quality. But with that, I want to close by thanking Chair Pinto and all of our witnesses here who've made the case so well for why Minnesota must robustly invest in our Head Start and early Head Start programs. Also want to thank all of the supporters, teachers, parents in the audience who were not able to testify. Thank you for being here and supporting Head Start. I want to underscore that this investment is a holistic investment in all of our families and our communities, even though it's our children who directly benefit. And I want to close by saying that, you know, I know how lucky I am to be an alum of St. Paul's Head Start program, thanks to Ms. Gwen and other people who helped me grow up. And I know how lucky I am to also be able to leverage what I gained in Head Start and grow up to attend one of the best colleges in the world, where the idea of Head Start actually came from, only to come back as a legislator and present this bill to the committee. But I want to underscore that the future of our children in Minnesota cannot depend on luck, so we must intentionally invest in the next generation now. And that is why I ask for your consideration of House File 874 to, as amended with the A2-1 amendment, to be included in the omnibus funding bill for our committee. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Lee. And just a note to members, I mean, so as I've been working on this, doing this work for a number of years now, Head Start and especially early Head Start. Oh, my goodness gracious, Representative Daniels, I'm so sorry. I just have not had this practice in the past, and it's been hard for me to get accustomed to it. Representative Daniels, sir, say your piece, and please.
You know, as a former roommate, I thought maybe you wouldn't forget about me.
This time I did. I'm so sorry. Yep, please do your thing.
Apology accepted.
Yep, thank
my
you.
Apologies to Representative Lee.
Well, that's on me, though.
To go to the lead and then to the author. I just a little comment about the infrastructure. If somebody could come up with more details on what that actually is going to go for, and maybe some costs of that would be nice. So when it's being laid over, we can maybe do that.
And let's make sure, by the way, let me just say, so Mr. Gradke, we can make sure to do that. And I think there'd be some interest as well in figuring out how much of that we could say could be dedicated to Tribal Head Start. I think that'd be important to me. So yeah, but please continue, Representative Daniels.
And then the only last thing I have a question of how many more children will be served with this increase. I mean, it's always nice to know what we're getting, you know, the bang for the buck.
And Mr. Gradke is going to come down and answer that, I think. That's a great question, Representative Dan. We always want to get back to the kids and the kids and families served. So looks
so
like he's got an answer too.
So with the additional funding, the $10 million, that equates to about 700 early Head Start children spread across the state, because they would go to every program. So all the programs would add children. And we made sure of that, even with the funding formula. And that amount ensures that every program has enough to add a few kids. Less than that amount, and the funding formula gets it to a place where not everybody can have add children. So.
And actually, I thought of a follow-up question on that. And I'm sorry, everybody, this is getting extended. Mr. Gradke, the average wage for somebody working at Head Start, I feel like one great thing about Head Start is that this is one program where people are receiving at least livable wages, I believe. But can you talk about the average wage for or the starting wage, or to some information about compensation, if you happen to have that?
I do, and it's in the fact sheet. Right now, roughly, it's $45,000 per year. We are looking at increasing that. We have several programs in Minnesota that are working on their grants. They're working with the federal government. We've got a handful of things going through that will ensure that that goes up and it's competitive with school districts. We lose staff to school districts, so we're going to build out wage and fringe to be competitive with school districts.
Yeah, and so members, I'll just point out, and I think we talked before, that this workforce, early childhood workforce, disproportionately women of color, and the lowest paid occupation you can have that requires a high school diploma, even though it's such important work. Mm-hmm. And Head Start, I think, has really shown the way for having for paying people decent wages. At least somebody can at least support themselves, at least somewhat, on $45,000, which is much higher than in some other areas. Which is great. But Representative Daniels, back to you to finish up, because I got in the way.
No problem. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Gradke, you said 700 more children would be served by the 10 million.
Mm-hmm.
And how many more, do you have any idea what the data would say about how many more than the 700 still could use a little help?
We approximate that there are probably between pregnant women and children birth to five, somewhere around 49,000 eligible families or eligible spaces in Minnesota. We have a lot of work to do and a long way to go. And we're asking for the amount we're asking for, really, because it's a capacity issue for programs. What I would say is we have to build buildings now. We don't have a lot of facilities that we can move into or take over. We need to build buildings, and we need to hire staff and recruit staff and train staff. As you've probably heard that there's a huge staffing shortage across education. We're feeling the effects of that too. What we would like to do is incrementally increase over time and build those things in. Part of one of the things that we're talking about too is a grow your own model. Where some of that you've heard today, where we bring parents in and we grow them up through the system and they become teachers and staff and move and hire. But all of that takes time. You can't snap your fingers and turn somebody that doesn't have any degree into a four-year degree teacher.
Hey, thank you very much. That sounds like the feat of the government. I've been working on some bills for 5 years now and still working on them, and carried the same bills for 4 years and still working on them. And thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yeah. Full disclosure, and you may have heard this in the first bill, I'm really encouraging proposals that will actually meet the need and do so realistically for the program. So in the case of Head Start, if this passes, if we do this bill, there'll be many more children who could benefit from Head Start. But Mr. Gradke and his team have looked at it and said, this is the maximum that we could use right now, and I appreciate you looking at that, and that's great. And again, Head Start is just a really powerful program. So thank you so much for your work. Representative Lee, thanks for your work. With that, the chair lays over House File 874 as amended for possible inclusion in a budget bill. Members, we've got a little bit of business to transact still, so stay in your seats. We need to do some business with some minutes, and then I want to give a quick preview for next week. First of all, regarding the minutes, we had minutes that we approved from February 2nd, and the eagle-eyed GOP researcher, Mr. Withers, and appreciate your work, sir, identified an error in those minutes. And so you have an additional copy, and members of the public watching online, that's on our website as well. I'm going to ask Vice Chair Keeler to move to reconsider the minutes of February 2nd. You can do that.
I move to reconsider the minutes for February 2nd.
Okay, right on. And so, and members, again, this is to correct an error in those minutes. Maybe I'll just note before we vote on the motion to reconsider that the concern was a motion by Representative Daniels, which in the prior version of the minutes said it was to lay over House File 2. It was actually to lay it on the table, which is a different motion. So any discussion of that motion to reconsider, first of all, none. So all in favor of approval of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes. And then Vice Chair Keeler, if you're willing, moves approval of the corrected minutes of February 2nd, correcting both the point that I noted, and also there's a little bit of language on the second page as well about House File 70, that that bill was brought before the committee, and then the chair laid that bill over. Is that your motion, Vice Chair Keeler?
That is my motion.
Okay, any discussion of that motion? Nope. All in favor of that motion, please say aye. Any opposed? Okay. Our minutes of February 2nd are re-adopted and approved. Then minutes of our meeting of February 7th on Tuesday. Quite simple minutes. Vice Chair Keeler moves approval of those minutes of February 7th. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Any discussion to those minutes? None. So all in favor of approval of February 7th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Those minutes are approved. And then finally, we had our joint meeting yesterday. Make sure that your name is on there in the appropriate spot if you folks had conflicting meetings. If nobody's speaking up about that. So Vice Chair Keeler, do you approve, move to approve our minutes of February 8th?
So moved.
Any discussion of that? No discussion. All in favor of approval of the minutes of February 8th of our joint meeting with the Education Finance Committee, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion passes. Thank you all so much, everybody. Thanks, Vice Chair Keeler, especially. Thanks again to Mr. Withers. So here's the plan. So on next Tuesday, we'll be having another joint meeting. This one will be with the Judiciary Committee, and a really exciting bill championed by Vice Chair Keeler regarding the Indian Child Welfare Act and the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. I think the Mifflin, yes. So that'll be a joint hearing. We will be meeting at the same time, 8:30, our usual time, but in Capitol 120. So please plan to, I don't know if we had not sent a notice about that yet. Okay, so that notice, formal notice to be going out, but also telling you all that right now. Same time, but just a different location. That will allow some remote participation and also just a larger group as well. Representative Katiz Witun, please.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to note for members that early in the morning, it does take a few extra minutes to walk over to the Capitol for those of us who have not been used to meeting over there for the early childhood.
That's a good, thank you, Representative Witun. Yeah, we used to meet there, and that was a problem getting here on time with those extra minutes. Any questions about anything, what we're doing? We'll announce the Thursday meeting. We're still figuring out a few details there. Not seeing anything. So thank you so much for your work. We'll go forward. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.